Hey, everybody. Happy Wednesday. It's Michael Martin. Thanks for being here. So I got an email on yesterday's episode, and it was about, you know, how to better prepare for the unexpected. And that's a juicy question, right? Because to me, it all comes down to position sizing. Your entries indicate the moment at which you turn bullish or bearish, right? Or not bullish, right? You don't have to necessarily go from bull to bear, but going to cash is certainly a time where you're not bullish any further. And so the question becomes, how do you, you know, do that? And so it's a delicate dance between putting on your protective stops when you enter and then having the right position size so that if all the what-if scenarios that you've gone through, you know, can hurt you, how bad will it be, right? So you can process that ahead of time as you look at the chart or go through whatever iteration you go through to kind of come up with your wish list. And then when you're about to pull the trigger, you can position size accordingly and say, okay, well, here's where normal volatility could knock me out given the prevailing vol, and here's where an outlier event could knock me out very quickly. And if it did so with this position size, what would that mean to your equity on a percentage basis, right? Now you do that enough and you kind of come to understand that the outlier events are just what you think. They're outlier events. They don't happen all the time. But when they do, they tend to be super Machiavellian and they cut hard. So therein is where you get to design a system, a set of rules with which you're compatible, right? Because you can say, okay, well, given the probabilities of these things happening, I know from time to time I'm going to take an outlier move against me, but they're very, very infrequent. And with that, I can position size accordingly today to be in the trade, right? To stay within my target drawdown over time, knowing that I have also enough risk to hit my financial goals. Because there's a point where you take so little risk where you could never really get hurt, but then the point is you'll never make any money either. And then what's the point, right? So therein is the delicate balance, and the truth is it's different for everybody. There are some people who are gunslingers, and they just say, hey, if it happens, it happens. I don't mind taking a big hit because most of the time it doesn't happen, and you end up worrying about things that never come to pass. And that might be true for life. But the point being is that if you are a fiduciary or you have that kind of aspect with what you're charged to do in handling other people's money, yeah, it's safe. It's better safe to be than to be sorry, for sure. On the other hand, you want to have this conversation, of course, with the client and speak to them and say, here's my reasoning, and then have them get a feel. Because the last thing you want to do is try to play it too conservatively and then end up losing the client because they thought you didn't, you know, wield a heavier hammer when you had the opportunity. So that's also a double-edged sword, right? Because everyone's super happy when you're making money. But, you know, if you trade the same position size and, you know, September 1st happens and all that kind of pullback, you're more grateful to have smaller positions. I think it also depends on the kind of size of the account that you have. If you are, you know, running size, you might have anywhere between $250,000 to maybe $1 million per idea. So that might, you might not be able to move your inventory in one fell swoop, you know, depending on the name. And then you get into the order entry on how you handle that. What do you put on the screen? What do you put on the traders? You know, what's on the stops and limits? And there you have it. So there's a little bit more poker playing that way in terms of when do you execute? Do you set alerts and then execute manually? Do you put some stops in for part of the position and then execute the difference, the remainder manually? So that's a deeper conversation. So it's not like you're trying to move 1,500 shares of Tesla, which you could do in one trade. This is a much bigger, you know, type of deal. So, but I think like anything else, you have to calibrate your sense of emotional intelligence on risk in that regard, and just also realize that, you know, how are other people likely to act given how news hits the tape? Because as much as, you know, just like playing poker, you get dealt the set of hole cards in Texas Hold'em, but you're also playing the people opposed to you at the table. And likewise, when you're trading, you have to definitely, you know, manage your own P&L, but you also want to kind of do that with an idea of what do you think the crowd's going to do at certain inflection points if securities move. if you want to get deeper into it and actually study the prices, you know, you would look at something like expected values, but then also like Bayes' theorem, right? And you'd look at, you know, what would be the probability of event B given the known probability of event A. And you can go about it that way. It's a little too much for a podcast when you can't see illustrations and calculations, but that's the kind of stuff that you would think about. Now, lastly, I'll leave you with this. When, say, you're trading anything from soybeans, which has probably $900 to $1,000 vol on the March contract, to any type of security that might have, you know, $10 to $30 in terms of daily vol, you know, you want to, when you talk about a trailing stop, you can trail several ways. You can trail, say, on the stock at any point that's $30 below the highest high that had ever been achieved. And you might have to adjust that stop every day. Same thing with beans, right? If you have 20 cent vol via an ATR measurement times 5,000 bushels, which is the standardized contract, you're looking at $1,000 of volatility on any given day. So as the thing trades up and up and up, you might adjust your stop so that your stop is always, say, 20 cents below any intraday high. You could do it based on a closing price. You know, that's all based on how do you feel and how you perceive risk, and you get to customize it, right? Again, the goal is to develop a set of rules with which you're compatible, and I think as long as you're consistent, whatever way fits you is good. And given the markets that we're in and how quickly they can move as news is disseminated, the playing field is very, very level. People at gigantic global macro funds see that information really no sooner than anyone else can see it on, say, stock twits or Twitter for that matter. So everyone has to act accordingly. And so if you know ahead of time how you want to behave, that's part of your edge, in that you don't have to sit there and get smashed upside the head while you're bleeding chips, so to speak, and the market's moving against you. You know ahead of time. So you might find that coming into 2021, when you do your evaluation on your postmortem on 2020, that, you know, you might be better served by having a trailing stop that always moves in the marketplace, so that if there is a sharp reversal against you, at least you have a systematic exit that you can follow for, if nothing else, at least part of your position, if not all of it. You know, my take, when the party's over, everyone has to go. Anyway, I'll be taking a couple of days off through the Christmas holiday, and I will be back on Monday. I want to wish you all a happy holiday season, and I get you spend some quality time with the people you care for and who also care for you. If you'd like a free copy of the audiobook version of The Inner Voice of Trading, you can go get it at martinchronicle.com. Other than that, I wish you the best, and I'll see you in a couple of days.